A production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I have the pleasure of calling this meeting of Senate State Affairs to order this morning. I ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Governor Abdallah, Thompson, Heidekrump, Newsom, Olson, Broden, Turbine-Ferry, Gray, Dexter.
Indeed, we have a quorum. Ask for a motion to approve the minutes. We have a motion. We have a second. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. we have a considerably shortened calendar this morning. It was my intent to have this meeting thick with bills, but we just couldn't get the job done. And as such, we have a confirmation of Michael Ropp to the South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority. Do we have someone here to testify for Michael Ropp? Well, good, then we'll defer this to a here we are. We have proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Hunter Roberts with Tourism and State Development.
Welcome, Hunter. Welcome. Glad to see you again.
Can you hear me now? Thank you. Professor Ropp's done a great job. He's an associate professor at SDSU. He's done a nice job serving on the committee. He has an electrical engineering background. He's very vital to the Energy Infrastructure Authority, and I guess I'd recommend that you approve his nomination.
Thank you. Other proponents? Do we have opponents? Questions? Ask for a motion. We have a motion from Senator Gray.
Second
from Senator Knutson. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah? Aye. Hanson?
Aye.
Heidekrump?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbine-Ferry?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Motion passes. That then brings us to Senate Bill 180 to revise certain provisions concerning statements submitted by organizations making contributions to ballot questions committees. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is the first time I've sat in this chair in this room, and it is a very, very nice room, and it is kind of imposing. So that is its purpose. Thank you for your comments, Senators.
Do I hear additional discussion?
Senate Bill 180 is a bill to help provide more transparency in our ballot question financing and reporting. We're not changing who can and cannot give. This merely puts teeth in the current law. When an organization that is not a PAC, or one that's organized to influence a ballot question, sends money over to a ballot committee, it will now also have to provide a statement that's signed under oath that it was not organized nor did it raise money for the particular purpose of influencing that ballot question. Now, if later that is found false, it is perjury, class 6 felony. Now, if you make an error somewhere else in the reporting, we've all got these reports, and if you put something in the wrong column or you make some other error, that's still a class 1 misdemeanor. The only thing we're looking at is those folks, they know what they raised those funds for. And if it was done to influence this ballot question and it was raised for that purpose, then they know and they have to sign this statement that says, no, I didn't do that. We're a member of the, and I'll just pick one out, say the Lions Club. And we at our board meeting decided to give $11,000 to this ballot question. Now, they didn't raise it for that particular purpose. That's not their job. They wouldn't. I'm a member of the Lions Club. Wouldn't happen anyway. But I'm trying to give an example. And so they could, in good conscience, sign that and not be a problem. And that's what we're after here. We're after transparency. And the purpose to make sure is that all those that are trying to influence our laws by the ballot commission or ballot committee, that we know what they're raising that money for, and that if it was for that, that they then have to follow the rules that we currently have in law for a ballot question committee, like a political action committee. That's all that we're requesting. It just puts some teeth into the current law so that that person, when they see this statement, they realize that this is a felony if I do this, and it has repercussions. So that is what the bill does. It, like I said, it doesn't change who can and cannot give. It merely puts teeth in the current law. And I would recommend that if you have specific technical questions about ballot laws and financing, that you might direct them to the Secretary of State, who is also going to testify, because he probably knows that law a lot better than I do. But I would be now available for questions. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Other proponents of Senate Bill 180? Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State, I rise to support this bill. A couple of things. First of all, this does not change who can and cannot give money so far as ballot questions are concerned, and it does not change who does or does not have to report campaign contributions for a ballot question committee. It does not change that. Here's what it does do. If you are an organization is a term that's defined in the existing campaign finance statute, and typically it's a group, it's a corporation, it's an LLC, it's an association. Those are organizations. If they give in excess of $10,000, and they can currently do that, and this doesn't change that, it says that they need to, with that contribution that they give to a ballot question committee, send along a statement stating affirmatively that this money was not raised for the purpose of influencing that ballot question. Now, if they cannot sign that statement in good conscience because it's not true, in other words, they had in fact raised the money for the purpose of influencing that ballot question, then they become a ballot question committee. They've met the existing definition of a ballot question committee and must file a complete campaign finance report as a ballot question committee. This is not going to impose on very many organizations. There are not many that give in excess of $10,000, and so the number of these statements that are going to have to be filed are few. And I think the last point that I would make, and as I was visiting with Senator Hansen before committee, he used the word expose. He said this is really going to simply expose those organizations that need to, in fact, file a campaign finance statement. And that's exactly the purpose of it, so that when somebody is giving one of these large contributions, and right now we think there may be some organizations that are giving those contributions and hiding behind the fact that they don't need to report, or they think they don't need to report, this is going to require them to affirmatively state, no, this is our treasury funds, we did not raise this for the purpose of influencing. And if they can't sign that in good conscience, then they are a ballot question committee and have to comply with the existing reporting requirements. Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to answer questions when appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Other proponents of Senate Bill 180? Other proponents of Senate Bill 180? Opponents of Senate Bill 180? Opponents? Opportunity for rebuttal? Close for committee questions, discussion, and or action. Senator Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Secretary of State Nelson. Mr. Secretary, do you think this works if individual A forms an entity, corporation, puts in $1 million, contributes that to organization B, with which individual A has no direct tie, maybe a friend is the president treasurer of Organization B. Organization B is going to take the position, hey, we didn't ask for anything. We didn't seek to raise anything. All of a sudden, somebody gave us $1 million. We're delighted, but then I'm going to contribute that to ballot question committee C. And do you think under that circumstance, which strikes me as a fairly logical route to go, that B is going to be unable to make this statement?
If I might respond to that, Organization B, as your illustration laid out, all of a sudden gets this $1 million for no purpose. Well, obviously there was a purpose. And the purpose in that likely was for Organization A to launder that money through Organization B in order to influence the ballot question committee. And so do I think the president and treasurer of Organization B would be able to sign this statement? Probably not, because they know the purpose for which that money came into their coffers and which it's going to be passed on. And in not being able to sign it, that then makes them a ballot question committee, and they would need to report.
I think I'm probably in agreement with you. The fact that both of us had to use the word probably gives me a little unease about this. Did you look at going the other way, conceivably in addition to this or as an alternative to this, to say that no organization can receive a contribution from another organization unless that organization is able to, you know, again, over the 10,000 limit. So now you put the meter not on the giving organization but on the receiving organization. It strikes me that that might be a useful belt and suspenders, might conceivably be more effective. But at any rate, I commend that to your thought.
If I might respond, no, I did not think about that particular possibility. One of the reasons is the statute that's being amended here already requires some report, some specific types of reporting for organizations that give over 10,000, and I simply added this language to that.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, if this Senate Bill 180 became law, how would that affect the pending lawsuit about the $750,000?
If I might, it would not. That lawsuit is based on the law that was in place at that time, and with the new campaign finance law, that's been entirely replaced, and so would not affect that.
Well, would you agree, Mr. Secretary, that if Senate Bill 180 had been in place prior to all the events involving Representative Hunt, that that would have resolved the issue, that that would have prevented the issue from developing?
If I might, yes, I think it would have gone a long way towards that, yes.
Would it also not be true that the recent controversy in the 08 election about the Open Government Act and the actions of the Conservative Action Council, whatever they were, would have required them to reveal, to verify that either the funds they had were not raised for purposes of influencing the ballot question or to report?
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly correct, yes.
Thank you.
First of all, Secretary, thank you for working on this and bringing this this bill. I want to make sure I understand where we are before I take a step to where we're going. Did you say that under our existing Title 12 that organizations are prohibited from donating more than $10,000 to a ballot question committee from funds that the organization raised specifically for ballot question?
If I might, no, I did not say that, okay. And nor is that the case.
Okay, is there a limit on the amount?
If I might, no, there is no limit on what an organization can give to a ballot question committee, and this does not change that.
All right. The disclosure in Senate Bill 180 on page 2, the statement that a president and treasurer is required to sign saying that the money for the contribution was not raised or collected by the organization for the purpose of influencing the ballot question. Is that prohibition already in statute?
If I might, no, it is not prohibited in statute, but if we look at 12-27-1, and that's the section that has all the definitions that apply to our campaign finance law, that says that if you're an organization and you begin collecting and receiving money for the purpose of influencing a ballot question, then you become, by definition, a ballot question committee and have the associated reporting responsibilities. That's how that transition takes place from organization to becoming ballot question committee. And what we're seeing is some organizations that are saying, no, we've got all this money, but boy, we sure didn't collect it or receive it for the purpose of influencing a ballot question committee. But I think there's a lot of question in folks' minds if that's actually the case. And what this is going to do is require those organizations to put it in writing.
All right. So in essence, what we're making them attest to would be a test that you're not a ballot question committee. That would just be a shorter way of saying
exactly
it.
Exactly correct, yes.
Okay. I'm a little curious when I – let's go back to Section 1. And first, there's a couple of alternatives. Under Section 1, the first subsection said an organization has to either basically be filed as a domestic or foreign entity. And then subsection 2 says, or it's not. I mean, if it isn't filed as a domestic or foreign entity, and then it says what the organization has to do. True?
Correct.
Okay. Now, here's what's confusing me, Secretary. You've got subsection 2 being the exact opposite of subsection 1, so it would seem to me that everybody is one or the other.
If I might, there's also subsection 3, which
right.
is the third alternative.
Exactly. And I'm wondering what can subsection 3 possibly mean, because subsection 1 says if you're filed as a domestic or foreign entity in good standing, okay, then you've satisfied section 1. Subsection 2 says if you're not filed as a domestic or foreign entity, then here's what you need to do. Then your subsection 3 says if you're neither subdivision 1 or 2.
If I might respond to that, subdivision 1, easy to understand, you're filed with the South Dakota Secretary of State. Subdivision 2 is for out-of-state corporations that are not filed in South Dakota. They're filed as an entity in some other state, but they've not filed in South Dakota. Subsection 3 gets at organizations that are not filed. They're simply groups of people or associations, and here's the exact and best illustration that I can give you. In 2006, we all of a sudden had something called South Dakota Association. That term showed up as giving lots of money to one of the ballot questions. Nobody had ever heard of South Dakota Association. They were not filed anywhere. And as it turned out, it was a name that was simply a cover name to launder money. And that's where Section 3 comes in, that if you're just creating a name and giving it to some kind of a group, subsection 3 covers that.
Gotcha. So subsection 2 perhaps is really intended to be a little more narrow than what it is, the way it literally reads?
I think so, yes.
Okay. I think that answers my questions. Thanks.
Other questions? Just a point of clarification. So if I'm SD Association once again, and I've got $100,000 in the bank, and I haven't raised any money to influence a ballot question, I can write a check for $10,000 to a ballot committee, and I can do that without reporting.
That is correct, yes.
If, on the other hand, if I've gone to whomever my members are, and I've said, we need to influence this ballot question, and send me a check, I now, when I write that $10,000 check, have to follow the provisions of this statute. Is that correct?
If you, and again, it's over $10,000, if you collect
money. That's what I said, $10,001.
$10,001, then you would not be able to sign this statement because you've, in fact, collected money for the purpose of influencing that ballot question. And instead of signing this statement, you have to file a complete campaign finance report as a ballot question committee showing where you received those monies from, those monies that you had solicited. And so I think the way I can sum it up best is if you are giving more than $10,000, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to file this statement saying, I did not collect or receive this money for the influence of influencing the ballot question. And if you can't sign that, because that's not the case, then you meet the definition of a ballot question committee and you're going to file a complete ballot question committee report. It's going to be one or the other.
Senator Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, is the requirement contained on page 2, lines 15 through 18, that applies regardless of whether or not I was able to make the affirmation. Is that true? This is the requirement that says if an organization contributes more than 10,000 and it's composed of 20 or fewer members or shareholders, they have to give a name and address of each shareholder?
If I might, that is if they are and if they meet the definition of the word organization. But if they've become a ballot question committee because they've collected and received money to influence that, then they're going to file a complete campaign finance statement, and they no longer have to file this additional information because they're not an organization. They've gone to this other status of ballot question committee and have to report completely.
Mr. Chairman? So, again, assuming I'm able to make the affirmation that it was not contributed or collected for purposes of influencing the ballot issue, if I gave more than $10,000, my organization, and if we had 20 or fewer members or shareholders, we would have to list who those people were, even though we were able to meet the requirement of not being a ballot committee.
That is correct, yes. And that's existing law, yes.
And if I could have one more question, Mr. Chairman. Is there any reason why you want to require that they have 20 or fewer members? Wouldn't it make more sense instead of saying it has to be a small corporation, just requiring that it list people that own more than 10% or 15% or some threshold like that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure there's any magic in that number, and I think it can go either way to get at the purpose of that. And obviously, I think we understand the purpose of that is to get at perhaps a shell corporation that's used to funnel money where there's only one or two people involved.
Yeah, my concern with that provision is that even though I contributed all the money, all I have to do is find 21 other people to contribute a buck, and then we don't have to disclose who I am, and that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Senator Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Secretary Nelson, we spoke several weeks ago about this very issue. If I remember correctly, you indicated you might have a definition bill, and I wondered if you did bring that and where that is at. In addition, I want to point out House Bill 1233 that I have signed on to and I think may have gone through a House committee this morning. I just want to make sure we're going down the right path here and we're not doing anything contradictory, and that all these will come together in a proper way.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, the answer is yes, 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 and yes. We did bring a House bill that defines ballot question committee, and it defines exactly the term treasury funds, and that's something we've had an issue with. That has passed through the House, and you all will be seeing it very shortly. House Bill 1233 passed out of House State Affairs this morning with a unanimous vote. That's a good bill. It works in concert with all of these other bills, and this particular bill works with the other two. There's no conflict in my mind at all.
Other questions? Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Questions? Discussion? Senator.
Well, I certainly endorse and appreciate the purpose of this. I do have some serious questions about if we presume it gets to be on the books, once it's on the books, just how clearly it can be interpreted and applied by lawyers and judges. And of course, as we know, no matter how good our intentions are, if we get it on the books in a way that is not clear and invites confusion, we just have more court battles and frustration. So I'm willing to support it, but I will tell you that I think it needs a fair amount of drafting changes to clarify the language of it and make sure that the actual form of it is consistent with the intent. So with that, I would support.
Do I take that as a motion, Senator?
Motion passed.
We have a do pass motion. We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is do pass. Is there discussion, Senator Knutson?
I agree with Senator Turbeck that this is a good bill and actually an important issue that needs to be done right. And I think I agree with her that this is not quite yet done right. But I also don't really want to hold it up from getting to the floor and stacking further things in your committee, Mr. Chair. But so I would have a substitute motion that on page 2, line 20, we strike the words "is composed of 20 or fewer members or shareholders."
We have a substitute motion. The substitute motion is an amendment. We have a motion. We have a second. Senator Knutson.
Part of the purpose, I think this idea of 20 shareholders just doesn't make any sense because my ability to go out and find 20 people to throw in a buck to shield me is very easy. Also, by adopting a single amendment, we will give it a day's delay before it actually comes to a vote on the floor and give us another day to actually work on amendments. So I think for two reasons this makes sense.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to amend Senate Bill 180. Is there discussion? Senator Heidepunk.
Question for Senator Knutson. Senator, to strike that language then, doesn't it make it more likely that you have just an individual with the financial ability to contribute more than $10,000? And isn't that what we're sort of trying to get away from in the whole Representative Hunt matter, in which there was just one person?
Senator.
Well, I think the whole thing is designed to produce disclosure. And again, as I see this current language, again, I put in $1 million, I find 21 other people to put in $1, we give $1 million, $21, nobody ever gets to find out who I am if some way, somehow, somebody can make the affirmation above that it wasn't raised for that purpose. And again, I am concerned that there is a lot of ingenuity in this area, and I don't think this 20 shareholder member thing gets you anywhere.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to amend Senate Bill 180. Is there additional discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senate Bill 180 as amended. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass as amended.
We have a motion from Senator Roden. Do pass as amended. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. A second is from Senator Knutson. The motion is do pass Senate Bill 180 as amended. Is there additional discussion? Additional discussion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbach-Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Senate Bill 180 passes as amended. That then brings us to Senate Bill 202 to require implementation of certain energy-saving measures in facilities and equipment maintained by the state. Well, Senator Grinos, you are welcome here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senator Cooper Garnes, District 21, I appreciate the opportunity to be before you today with Senate Bill 202, and this is an act that would require implementation of certain energy-saving measures in facilities and equipment maintained by the state. Last night, I come up to the Capitol, really quick story, and I put this on each one of your desks. You may have seen this. You're probably familiar with the curlicue, but I put it on Senator Roden's desk this morning, and he threw it in the garbage right away. I said to him, did you get that? He goes, yeah. He goes, I already threw it away. And we talked about this for a minute or two, but he goes, I did put it in the recycling bin.
That's
not foreshadowing of where this bill is going to go.
It's a tough life that we have, isn't it?
Once again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. I'm going to focus on four main points. Number one, I'm going to speak about the broad mechanics and flexible language that we put into the bill. Number two, I'll talk about the goals. Number three, I'm going to talk about the timing and the needs of the bill. And lastly, I'm going to talk about being a committed leader to this cause. First of all, when you look at the bill, I try to make this as simple as possible and to get this debate going. There are approximately five other states that do something similar to this. And what I was trying to do is look at the measurable consumption, the power usage that is used in South Dakota at our different campuses in state government. And included in that, of course, would be the Board of Regents, our state hospitals, which are located in Redfield and Yankton, the penal system, which is in Sioux Falls, Springfield, Pierre, some other places, and, of course, our campus right here in Pierre, South Dakota, and then where state government is scattered out throughout the other states or throughout the state and other towns. And number five, Custer would be another example of that. I think we need to start to develop the framework for performance standards. The goals, number two, is obviously to save electricity and power. It would also save money. I think it's smart, something that up front it is going to cost some money, but obviously in the long term it's going to be good. Energy efficiency. In my opinion, this is our first fuel, one of the first things that we can tackle. It's the low-hanging fruit that we can save money, we can make government more efficient. And I think one of the biggest challenges will be is changing our culture when we look at energy conservation and stimulating our economy. Number three, I think the timing is right. We will have a federal stimulus package that will be passed. And both on the House and Senate side, there will be billions of dollars of money for energy programs which are going to focus on efficiency and renewable energy. So I think the money will be there up front to possibly do some of this. We know what kind of budget situation we're in. We're in the situation where we're going to cut human capital this year. We're going to cut people. We're going to cut programs for the most part. Here's an opportunity to save money and maybe make some changes there. On the national level, you've seen a lot of talk about smart meters, plug-in electric vehicles, and the utility benefits. And finally, do we want to ask the question and should we answer the call to be a committed leader to this? Once again, I think these are attainable goals. I put numbers out there in the year 2015 that we could possibly save up to 15% on energy consumption levels. I don't know if those are the right numbers for sure. I mean, there are experts in the room that I think will discuss that possibly a little more. Once again, if you look throughout the United States, there are four or five other states that have efficiency standards. And if you look what, in terms of mandate, what's been done on the national level in terms of renewable fuel standards for South Dakota, look what's happened in the ethanol industry. We have goals that we're trying to meet. And if you don't set goals out there, if you don't put in place things that you want to get to, I submit that you will never get there. I think this needs to be part of our broader portfolio, not only in terms of renewable fuel standards, but also in terms of efficiency. Once again, I would ask for your support on this bill. I would certainly stand by for any questions when it's appropriate. Thank you, Chairman Dempster.
Thank you, Senator. Other proponents of Senate Bill 202? Other proponents of Senate Bill 202? Are there opponents of Senate Bill 202?
Yes.
Are there opponents of Senate Bill 202?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Members of the Committee, my name is Christy Honeywell. I'm the State Engineer with the Bureau of Administration.
Welcome, Christy.
Thank you. I'm here to testify in opposition of Senate Bill 202. This bill asks all state agencies to reduce their energy consumption in state-owned and leased property by 15% by 2015. It's a good goal, and we think that we have taken measures to reduce our energy consumption, and I want to talk about that a little bit later. But unfortunately, to reduce it by that much, it takes a lot more than adjusting our thermostats, turning the lights on and off, taking out appliances out of our state agencies. To do this, it will require a major overhaul of mechanical and electrical systems statewide, and in many cases will require replacement of windows and some insulation. I was going to try to give you kind of a cost estimate, and it would be very difficult to do that because buildings are different everywhere. But recently we had a renovation project, and just the energy portion of that was about $10 per square foot. So you can see statewide it would be a significant cost to the state. If you remember that there was legislation that came before you last year that was defeated to require a $10 million energy loan package. If that had passed, we would have had significantly more funding to help with energy projects across the state. Also, like I said, I think it's a very, very good idea. The state has already implemented a number of measures to reduce our energy consumption. First off, we do purchase Energy Star equipment. We have eliminated incandescent lighting from state contract and in favor of more energy efficient T8 lights. State agencies are committed to reducing their state travel by 10%, which will further reduce our fuel cost. We are constantly upgrading our lighting, mechanical, and electrical systems during any kind of renovations as funding allows us to do that. Because of legislation passed last year, we've been able to begin to constructing new LEED Silver buildings. To date, we have 9 buildings in that process and at least 9 renovations. So that should help us out long term as far as energy savings for our new buildings. A couple different things. You probably are aware of a couple projects that we have had in the last couple years. The Human Services Center has decentralized their boiler plant. They have boilers at individual locations now. That project cost approximately $3.2 million, and we are hoping that we're going to save about 30% reduction in our energy use. Another one that we've done is the Star Academy. We have converted their propane boiler system to a biomass boiler system that uses wood chips purchased through the Black Hills. And the last thing, the last point I would like to make is that Commissioner Bloomberg from the Bureau of Administration has formed a sustainable government task force group made up of different state agencies to look at future energy savings possibilities in the future. Because of these issues, I would respectfully ask you to vote no on Senate Bill 2202, and I'll be available for any questions.
Thank you, Christy. Other opponents of Senate Bill 202? Other opponents for Senate Bill 202? Senator Garnos, opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Very quickly, number one, in terms of the funding, again, I think, you know, I'm not particularly a big fan of the federal stimulus package. It's going to happen. I think there will be funding there. And remember one thing that you have to, if we do things up front, you have to remember it's going to save money in the long run and all the benefits that also come with that. And also, I think you have to remember whose money is this that runs these institutions throughout the state. It's the people's money, and it's the fees that are paid by the students, but the majority of it comes from us, the taxpayers. I commend the state and the people that work for the state. They're doing a good job in terms of efficiencies and what they can do, but my last rebuttal would be is, you know, one thing I heard is a goal too big. You know, I've heard this time and time again. I believe this. You know what we do here in South Dakota? We carve mountains. Is that goal too big? I would leave it at that. Do you think it's important enough to put some goals, efficiency standards out here that are not only good for state government, but it's good for the people, it's good for the environment? Thank you very much.
Questions, members of the committee for opponents or proponents? Questions? Senator.
I have a question for Ms. Honeywell. Ma'am, what is it that the administration is most opposed to, trying to reduce energy consumption by 15% or telling the legislature what it's doing?
No, not at all. We are a strong proponent on energy savings. Our point is that to make the 15% reduction, it would cost a huge capital expenditure that we just don't have.
You recognize, don't you, that in line 4 of the bill, it does not say that each state agency and department shall implement procedures adequate to achieve 15% reduction. It says they shall seek to. How can you possibly be opposed to a bill that just says you have to try to accomplish this?
The only thing that I'm saying is I think that all state government, they are doing that already. We are looking at a number of different issues across the board to do that.
One more. So then the objection isn't to the goal, of 15%. The objection is to reporting to the Legislative Government Operations and Audit Committee the progress of it?
No. No, I don't. We're not opposed to that also. It's the fact that the 15%, we will be unable to get to that point, to the 15% reduction by that 2015.
Senator Heidepump.
How on earth do you know that? It's 6 years away. All Senator Garnos is asking you to do is to seek to achieve that goal and then to tell us how you're doing.
I understand that. My only point is the 15% reduction, and please understand that we believe that we should cut, and understand also with our electricity rates that we have for WAPA, they're very, very inexpensive as it is. So we can cut energy consumption to do that. If we would, but to reduce that much by 2015, it would take probably over $100 million to do that, to reach that goal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the bill doesn't require you to spend any money, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. It just requires you to make the attempt and to report back to us how you're doing, and you are against that.
I am not against reporting back how the progress of the Bureau of Administration or the agency is, no.
Additional questions for proponents or opponents? Additional questions for proponents or opponents? Close for committee discussion and our action. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, in section 1, line 5, I would like to strike the 15 and replace it with 6, and that is a motion.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Senator. Chairman. The reason I'd like to put that back down to 6 and doesn't go anything against the goal at hand here, and I think that's what, to bring attention back to energy efficiency, you know, my boss, who I think is pretty wise, said, you know, the cheapest megawatt of power that we can produce is the one we don't have to. And so to go to 15% throws us way beyond the federal steps that are going to be attempted to be implemented in the next coming year to 3 years. Our neighbors to the east in Minnesota have a similar statute on the books right now, and I believe that 9% is the number that they're going to attain in this same time frame. And regionally, when you look at it, I come back and I've talked to some folks in the industry, 6% is still a pretty aggressive goal. So to go from 0 to 6, I think, to me, makes more sense. We want to bring awareness, and I think that everyone is getting more and more aware of energy conservation and efficiency, and certainly by your opening statement, just to know that my friend Senator Roden recycled very well may get him kicked out of a couple clubs that he's in back home. I don't think that it's very popular to announce that he's a recycler, but it has brought the appropriate awareness, and so therefore I'd urge you to support passage of the bill with the 6% as the new number.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? The motion is an amendment. We have discussion as to the amendment. Senator?
I couldn't be more disappointed to hear folks saying, let's lower our sights. Let's lower our goals. I mean, you know, what coach takes his team into a tough game and says, you know, well, we're going to really try to get to a tie here. Or somebody says, boy, I'm hoping that maybe I'll accomplish what I know I can accomplish. Nothing ever gets done that way. This is only a goal. Technology is developing by leaps and bounds, and certainly with the new administration in Washington, there's a huge emphasis on energy efficiency and the development of greater technology. So I recognize that maybe we won't reach the goal, but the fear of failing ought never prompt us to set our goals low. I would urge people to resist the substitute.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'll take a different track, and it kind of surprised me to hear people that are involved in the field of law make statements like that, because if that's the case, well, let's change it, let's amend it to a 50% or 60% efficiency. From my perspective, what we're doing here, and I don't know as I can support the bill at all, regardless of the amendment, is it proper for us to start putting goals in statute? Why not pass a resolution in support of this and make these statements in the form of a resolution? Shall seek to implement. We all agree that there is no force of law contained in this bill. It's simply goals. Is it proper to put goals in statute? I think not.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Heidepam.
Mr. Chairman, I would be surprised if I checked the record, Senator Roden, and found that you did not support Representative Dykstra's bill for a renewable energy goal, in spite of the fact that many of us thought it should be a standard as our surrounding states have adopted. You and others preferred that we simply use a goal. If that's what we're going to be doing, then let's make it a goal that's worth achieving. 6% in 6 years.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there additional discussion? Senator Turbuckberry.
I'd like to just respond to Senator Roden's, I think, very legitimate question. If the bill ended in the middle of line six, you might well be right. But the bill, in fact, does not. I think it's an important statute because it not only sets a goal, but then it does two things. It directs the PUC and the Bureau of Administration to prepare a report of energy-saving measures, and I certainly didn't hear the PUC complaining about that. In fact, I suspect from what we've seen from them, they would jump right in with both feet and try very hard to provide that guidance. And the second thing it does is it requires information to the legislature and accountability, and I think both those things are really worthwhile. Even though it is a goal, not a standard, It is a bill that has some teeth to it because of the mechanism it puts in place for the PUC, Bureau of Administration, and then our own GOAC committee.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to amend. Is there additional discussion? Additional discussion? Ask the secretary. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Roll call.
Senator Abdallah?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Heidepram?
No.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbuckberry?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
No. Motion fails on a 5-4 vote. We have Senate Bill 202. Pass for motion, Senator Knudsen.
Mr. Chairman, hopefully a somewhat less controversial motion. On line 9, I would recommend we delete Government Operations and Audit Committee and insert Legislature.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a motion to amend. We have a motion and a second. A second is by Senator Gray. Senator Roden.
Just a question. Would Legislature be more appropriate than the E-Board?
Senator Knudsen.
I think that's a good question, Senator Roden. I think, though, this would just say that they need to provide it to all members of the legislature. I think, by and large, departments have been doing that electronically, so it's a relatively painless way. I think it gets the information to all of us, so I think it's probably okay just as the legislature.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there a discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. Senator Knudsen.
I'll try one more, going into more dangerous water. I'd move that we amend the bill in line 5 by putting a period after the word operate and deleting the balance of that sentence on lines 5 and 6. Again, rather than pick a particular percentage, which may arguably be too low and not inspire enough effort, or one that is too high and represent unrealistic expectations, perhaps we're better off simply asking, directing the state administration to implement energy-saving devices.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there a discussion? Motion, second. Is there a discussion? The second was from Senator Gray. We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to amend. All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Heidepram?
No.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbach Berry?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
No. Senator Hedepin. We have a due pass, Senate Bill 202 as amended. We have a motion from Senator Hedepin, a second from Senator Turbach Berry. Is there discussion? Is there discussion? The motion is due pass as amended. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
No.
Turbach Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
No.
Dempster?
Aye. Senate Bill 202 passes to the floor as amended. Thank you, Senator. That then brings us to House Bill 1034, a revised certain provisions relating to earnings subject to garnishment. House Bill 1034. Do we have proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rich Satgast. I'm the state auditor for the state of South Dakota. It's my pleasure to be with you this morning.
Welcome.
House Bill 1034 is proposed legislation to maintain compliance with federal regulations as they relate to garnishments in South Dakota. I'm proposing this legislation as it is the responsibility of my office to uphold garnishment withholdings on employees for the state of South Dakota, state employees. And while this legislation does not only affect state employees, it affects any employee or employer that is undergoing a garnishment withholding. As of next July, changes in the federal minimum wage will affect how garnishments are calculated. This bill does not set the minimum wage in South Dakota, but rather how employee garnishments are calculated. Just for a little information, a wage garnishment is any legal proceeding or procedure which some portion of a person's earnings are withheld by an employer for the payment of a debt. Now, typically these can be from court orders, or in other instances, it's IRS withholdings that from the federal government or state agencies that also hold state taxes, which in South Dakota we do not have. It can also be a federal agency, which is a non-tax debt. They have a procedure as well for imposing garnishments upon the citizens of the United States. Federal law under Title III of the Consumer Credit Protection Act limits the amount of an employee's earnings that may be garnished, which under South Dakota statute is identified in subsections 1 and 2 on lines 7 and 8 of the printed bill. Primarily the crux of this bill is on page 1, line 11 of the printed bill, which identifies the federal statute that changes on July 24th, 2009, and is a change of the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour, which employers use for the calculation purposes. As I stated earlier, House Bill 1034 is a change to bring South Dakota into compliance with federal regulations. And because this is a requirement, I would ask for the committee's favorable consideration of House Bill 1034. Thank you.
Other proponents for House Bill 1034? Other proponents? Do we have opponents on House Bill 1034? Opponents? Close for committee discussion and or action. Well, we have a due pass motion from Senator Abdallah. That is a due pass motion. Do we have a second?
Second
from Senator Roden. We have a motion. We have a second.
Our
motion is a due pass motion. Senator Heideprin.
I had a question for Mr. Satgast before the motion was made, if I could ask that.
Entirely appropriate.
Thank you. Mr. Satgast, as I understand your testimony, this is not something about which we have any discretion. This is a change in federal law that must be made so that we are current.
Correct, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Knudsen.
If I could ask a question of Mr. Satgast, is the federal law that you're referencing has already been amended just with an effective date of July 24, 2009. Is that correct?
If I may, Mr. Chairman. In addition to that, it also references the new statute on the federal level, which the reason why we wanted that is that if employees or employers needed further clarification, they could actually go to the federal statute and see that there are possible changes that have taken effect as far as basically the way that they calculate disposable income and that sort.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is a do pass motion. Is there additional discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Knutson.
Again, I'm not sure I'm terribly worried about it, but I mean, there is probably a delegation question as this currently is written, where it sort of would say whatever changes are done in this statute between now and July 24, 2009, we're fine with. That probably is unconstitutional, as I understand our ability to delegate to certain things. So I don't know if it's worth the effort to try and clean it up as currently amended to take effect on July 24 or not. But, I mean, this certainly seems to have a little bit of a problem.
Do I take that as a substitute motion?
No, that's just a question.
Members of the committee?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we talked about this in our office, and this is kind of a unique situation because it's a delayed effective date at the federal level. And so we thought about, you know, putting in a prior date, but then you would have the confusion as to just what wage you'd be referring to. So we thought it would be pretty safe to put this date in because that's the delayed effective date that is in the federal law, and it's also the date that our state minimum wage is tied to as well.
We have a do pass motion. Is there additional discussion? Motion is do pass. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah? Hansen?
Aye.
Heide-Prim?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Turbach-Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye.
Move consent.
We have a consent motion. We have a second. We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ask for a motion to adjourn. Motion, second, discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? We stand adjourned.